Whale. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news, behind the news, the story, behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening our guest is Bob Chapman, who is the editor of the International Forecaster. And Bob's been at this about the only person I know longer than I have. He's started probably in the late 1950s. I started in the early 1960s, but I certainly always look forward to having him as a guest on our program as we begin to explore what's happening, not only to our country financially, but from the spiritual and political point of view as well. Bob Chapman, thanks very much for being with us. Bob, are you there? Bob Chapman, are you there on the phone? Well, I'm wondering what's going on as far as Bob is concerned. Bob, are you there?
I am here.
All right, very good. Well, why don't you tell us what your take is? Certainly, the market seems like it's just never going to stop going up. Things must be awfully good if the market's going up that high.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask that, because we're publishing tomorrow and I'm already writing the next one. And I've just written a paragraph here and I'll read it to you. After having expanded money and credit by more than 10% for 4 years, after encouraging yen and Swiss franc carry trades worth $1.2 trillion in the expansion of credit, and after allowing non-regulation of derivatives and hedge funds that created trillions more in credit, our economy has from official questionable growth in the fourth quarter of last year of 2.5% of GDP to 1.3% of GDP in the first quarter, which is not very good. All these trillions of dollars couldn't keep the U.S. economy growing over 3%. This economy is in serious trouble. The flip side is the sea of money has caused, via enormous leverage, the Dow to hit new highs well over the 13,000 mark as the economy falters. The Dow is up 82% from its low of 7286 on October the 9th of 2002, and over that period, GDP grew only 38%. This is one of the most vulnerable, phony bear market rallies in decades. There is no business cycle. This is a credit asset cycle gone wild via speculation and leverage.
Well, certainly you've made the point in your repeated newsletters that the M3, that is the figure of all the money that that is in circulation here in the United States, has been going up over 10% a year, and then the credit, and certainly the credit that's separate than money, sometimes that even goes up as high as 14%. Now, that's highly inflationary, isn't it?
It certainly is, and unfortunately, our government and many others are lying about their statistics, and they're lying about everything. It's just not the inflation, which is the CPI, or the PPI, which came out today, and the PPI officially annualized is increasing at 8.4%.
Well, I mean, that's highly inflationary.
What's that?
That's highly inflationary.
Well, yeah, I tell you, the choices that are available either producers of goods and services cut wages, cut costs, or they increase prices.
Now we're going to be back
and
here.
And they've been increasing prices. And
hold that thought. We'll be right back, Bob.
Sure.
All right, Bob, you said that, of course, the producers are going to have to start increasing prices. Is that right?
Yeah, even more than I have already. They've been absorbing a lot of it, but I don't think they can go much further on it. They're going to have to raise prices more. And they have this core CPI, which the government talks about. It's absolutely worthless. It's psychological warfare. It's disinformation. It doesn't mean anything.
That was your
so don't listen to them. And even their figures are showing inflation for CPI, which is the total inflation by their yardstick, is over 3%. But real inflation right now has moved up to 11%. It's been over 10% for the last 4 years. And, of course, we're being joined by Russia at 45.6%. And China at 18.8%, and Europe overall at around 10.5%, and then you've got the continent, and then you've got the United Kingdom at 13% last month, and so the European economy is doing better than it has in 20 years. Well, why? Well, if you're going to increase all that money and all that credit, of course it's going to get hot and get better. But it's just like a drunk. He's going to drink until he can't drink anymore, and then he's going to fall down and pass out. Well, what happens to the economy when it passes out? It falls apart, and I think that's what we're facing. And I think that people have to plan for that, and they're certainly aware of it. And what should they do? They should get out of debt, get rid of that credit card debt, and the debt that you have on revolving credit and vehicle loans, because there's a good chance one of you will not be employed this year or next year or the year after. And so you got to put your house in order.
All right, well, Bob, I have a question I wanted to find out. You know, certainly we know that the Japanese have been lending money, creating money and lending money at about a 0.5% interest somewhere in there. And this is responsible for the carry trade, but haven't they created an awful lot of money that's going to be terribly inflationary for the Japanese economy when all that money comes flooding back in?
Well, what they'll do is retire it.
How will they retire it?
When the money comes back in, they'll do that by either raising reserve requirements for the banks, which means that a higher percentage of the yen cannot be loaned out.
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply asking Bob Chapman one of the things that's really puzzled me. Japan has been lending money at about 0.5% interest, not to its own people, although it'll lend it to them, but to the hedge funds and other people. And that money that has been highly inflationary throughout the world, the hedge funds that borrowed at 0.5%, and for a time they were investing it in Iceland at 10%, and that's pretty good if you're highly leveraged. And that's why the hedge funds were making so much money, or even, borrowing 0.5% and investing in bonds in the United States at 4.5% interest. But I was asking him, what is going to happen to all that Japanese money that's been created out of thin air when it goes back to Japan? And would you like to just repeat how this is going to be handled so that they don't destroy the entire basis of the Japanese economy and currency when that money returns?
Well, first of all, the Japanese economy has never recovered from their depression, contrary to what you've been told in the media. And it began in 1992, and it's gotten worse, and it hasn't ended. We've had a rally here in the last year and a half, but they still get interest rates of 0.5% or 1%, and so that tells the whole story. Now, when the yen comes back in, the Bank of Japan can raise reserve requirements, which means that banks have to hold more money in abeyance as reserves rather than lend it. And so that causes a contraction in the supply. Or the Bank of Japan can start sucking in reserves back into the Treasury. So that's the two ways that they do it. They don't care whether they have inflation because they've had such deflation. And so if they had 3 or 4% inflation, they wouldn't worry about that. But the amount of money that's being added to the increases in money supply in the United States and other countries, and let's say for a benchmark it's 10%, the monies that are the money and the credit, particularly credit, that you have to add to that is the result of that yen and a Swiss franc carry trade, which is about $1.2 trillion. And that's been pushed into the system. And then you have banks that will go to Japan, say a commercial bank in New York, and they'll borrow $1 billion worth of yen, and they'll convert it to dollars. Then they'll take the dollars and they'll invest it, or they'll take the dollars and lend it out at an 8-to-1 basis. So they'll create more money with that money. On the other hand, you have derivatives, which create credit, and you have the hedge funds, which create credit. And so by the time things are over, credit has not really been increasing at 10% for the last 4 years in the United States, but rather 14. And now I think that figure is approaching 15%. Although the money supply is has recently gone back a little. In fact, I just got today's figures. But the credit is what you've got to look at. And until the credit stops being used in the manner which it is, which is speculation, until that stops, we're going to have inflation and hyperinflation. And they have no intention, any central bank, of cutting back on the creation of money and credit. And they're going to do it until they can't do it anymore, because they learned in 1928 that if you contract credit to slow the economy down, you're liable to cause a depression like they did at that time. And so they're not going to do that. They're going to go all the way this time. And we could have a modern Zimbabwe scenario in the United States and throughout Canada and Europe and other places as well, particularly China and Russia. It could be like also the problems that were had in the Weimar Republic in Germany in 1923. So I think that's where we're headed. There's every indication. We've been predicting this for the last 6 years, this evolutionary process, and it's been ongoing because they continue to create money and credit, and we continue to have sorry, I have a cold, and we continue to have inflation, and it gets worse and worse. But they don't care about that, because the rich in Wall Street keep on getting richer.
Well,
just in the final analysis, they're going to lose it all unless they're in gold.
Well, of course, what we're really seeing, of course, is the drop now in the value of the dollar. It's really getting down to about 80 in the basket of currencies, isn't it?
It closed at 82.02 today.
Oh, it's 82.
That was the last figure I got. And the central banks, particularly the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve, are scared that we're going to break 81. We almost did it last week. And they want to defend the dollar there. And they'll do that for several months. And it'll go and test 80, and then it'll go there for several months. But sooner or later, it'll break. And when it breaks, what'll happen is that people will flee from the dollar. The $2.4 billion a day we need in foreign investment to keep us from going bankrupt may not appear anymore, and the economy will slow down, which it already has. We are already deeply into recession. They just don't want to tell you that. And that recession started over a year ago. And it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. I mean, just look at the figures coming out. Even the official figures are dreadful. And, of course, as you mentioned, the stock market's going up. Why? Well, it's the sea of money that's making it go up. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be in there when it comes down.
Well, of course, it was very interesting that Alan Greenspan was reported in the last couple of days as having said that he thought there was about a 30% chance or a third a percent chance that we would have a recession this year. So do you think
he updated it to 50-50.
All right.
Yeah. And he's the one that caused it.
Sure.
He did under orders. And his regime from 1987, as Federal Reserve chairman, was a disaster. I mean, we could have stopped all this in the recession of 1989-92. But no, they wanted to keep it going. They had their agenda at the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute, and so they did what they wanted to do.
Well,
and now, as we know, they have been trying to set the stage for a depression so that they can invite everybody who's on their knees financially into the world government.
Well, I thought it was very interesting. The latest issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, which for our listeners is the theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, which really runs the United States. Of course, they're simply a front for the power elite. But there is an article, this latest issue, about a global currency. And this was the solution to all the problems of the world. Having a global currency that would have nothing to do with national sovereignty, because that's pretty well outvoted. And they even talked about something about a gold-backed or private currency, something, anyway, the new currency would somehow be tied to gold, and this would be private. Do you have any idea what they're talking about?
Well, it's not going to be tied to gold. What they want is three regional currencies next. They have the euro in Europe, and they have the dollar in the United States. And in Europe and Asia, they're going to form and they're in the process of forming an Asian monetary unit. And from there, they, in North America, they will attempt to institute the Amero after the merging. That's what they want to do, is merge the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Once that's in place, they'll try to spread the Amero throughout the northern and southern hemisphere. And have everybody in North and South America with the Amero. And after they do that, then they'll merge all three of them together into a world currency, and it won't be backed by gold. And people will have gold, but whatever they do with gold will be unusual and different. And gold will go up substantially, because people know that currencies always become fiat. And this time it's the world's reserve currency. That's not unusual. Great Britain was the world's reserve currency, and in 1935 the currency collapsed. You know, the pound, even pound was 480 when it collapsed. They withdrew the gold backing, and anybody had pounds outside of the United Kingdom, all the colonies and others, they get stuck holding the bag. They wouldn't redeem their currency. They just reneged on it. And most people don't know that because they haven't studied economic history. And most people who are alive in 1935 are dead. You and I are exceptions. But anyway, that's what, you know, that's what we're facing. And,
so these people thought
reserve currencies go that way.
And so all these people thought they had all the money. It was deposited elsewhere. It was in British pounds. And it's always been the stabilizing currency of the world. And one day, if you didn't have it in Great Britain, it became then worthless. Was it ever redeemed?
No.
Never was redeemed?
Nope.
And I guess these people then lost everything. Well, unfortunately...
Well, you know, in those days, the people would have their local currency. But in the Commonwealth, they had pounds, so they had a problem. In fact, in 1950, the pound was still 420, even after all that, to the dollar. And the pound went down. I think the low in the pound was 135 or 145 during the 1980s. And today, it's just under 2 to a dollar. But it just goes to show you, you can't long-term be in currencies. You can use them. You can gamble with them by buying stock. But ultimately, gold is always going to keep its value.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman as we explore really what's going on in the world today. Prepare for some very difficult times. They're just around the corner. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Bob, I was really fascinated the fact that you were the first person I'd read who commented that the Eisenhower Military Task Force aircraft test.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Although there is a cosmic timetable out there, but I asked Bob if he felt that they were going to destroy the value of our currency, and what was your answer?
There's a dollar index, and that dollar index is made up of six other major currencies versus the dollar. And we said earlier in the program it was 82.02. And I expected them to try to hold it at 81 and then at 80, and eventually it'll break. And the question is, where will it go? And I think it'll go down to 45 to 55. So let's say 50. And so that's quite a haircut. And what is that, 40% or something like that? And that's what I think is going to happen. And, you know, what you're looking at here as far as major currencies is concerned is the worst of the biggest currencies. What do you mean by that? Well, the dollar only goes up, only goes down against the other currencies because it's the worst. The other currencies are almost as bad. They've got the same problems. Not as bad as the dollar has, but they're no great shake. And that's why when people say to me, well, I would like to have gold and silver, but I'd like to, you know, I'm wealthy and I have an extra $500,000 here. What do I do with it? I really don't want to be in dollars. And I tell them, go into Swiss franc bonds. You're not going to get much of a yield, but the Swiss franc is not going down against the dollar.
Although they are certainly not acting very responsibly when they've, of course, been playing the hedge funds or letting the Swiss franc be used, by the hedge funds the way they have.
Well, that's only because the interest rates on the Swiss franc are low, and they should raise them. But the Swiss have unemployment of 2.9%. And I lived in Switzerland for 3 years. I went to school there for a while, actually a year and a half. And I took French. I took 8 years of French in a year and a half. And it's called the Interpreter School at the University of Geneva. And they don't lie about things. And so their unemployment's 2.9%. Their inflation goes from 1 to 1.5%. And they have an enormously strong economy, a very, very well-run country, very hard-working people, and actually very boring. If you're single, it's okay. If you're married, it's another story. But the Swiss franc is solid. They don't have any backing of gold behind their currency anymore, but the Swiss have enough gold in their coffers, so to speak, to give the Swiss franc about 45% gold backing, were they to choose to do that. And so you know it's there, and it can be used if it's needed to be used. So for currencies, it's the only one.
All right, fine. Well, now as far as the gold and silver, you'd anticipate that be going up as the dollar's been going down, but actually the gold and silver have been falling this last couple of weeks, and I'm sure you're probably going to tell me that it's all being manipulated.
Well, when you have, over an 8-week period, central banks from the European arrangement, selling group, used to be called the Washington Agreement, they're allowed to sell 500 tons of gold a year. And they didn't sell hardly any gold for about 3 months. And all of a sudden, miraculously, when gold started to go over 700, they decided to sell simultaneously. And so they sold 112 tons of gold during that 8-week period just passed. The Spanish sold 20% of their reserves, and they're not part of that group. And they could sell more if they chose. Whether they're going to do that or not, I don't know, because they haven't said so. But that is a tremendous amount of gold. And they did that in conjunction with naked shorting in London, and also a very high short position. In fact, the record short right now is only about 7,000 contracts short of reaching the record, which was reached not too long ago. And so you get shorting in the futures market in the United States, which is being directed by the Working Group in Financial Markets, which is part of the U.S. Treasury. And then you have naked shorting in London.
Hold that up right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. We were simply talking about the manipulation of the gold market, and the fact that the major central banks are selling massive amounts of gold. But the question is, who's buying all this gold? Is this a real sales, or is this simply a facade to cover for the manipulation of the gold market by the central bankers of the world?
Well, let me tell you who is not buying gold. U.S. citizens, Canadians, and Europeans. Who is buying gold are the people who are directing the sale of gold. They're personally buying it in their own corporations and in their own accounts to some extent. And they have been ever since gold was $250. The second group of buyers, which are the largest in the world, is India. And India owns 30% of the above-ground historical supply of gold, and they take off about 25 to 30% of total gold production every year. They're followed by the Middle East, which are perennial buyers as well, and now China is a big buyer, as well as other Southeast Asian countries. So after gold hits $1,200 or $1,500 an ounce, Europe, Canada, and the United States will say, gee, gold's going up again. I think I ought to get on the wagon. And so they're going to start buying. But gold's got a long way to go. And all this delay for the past 6 years, these roadblocks that have been put in by the central banking community, all they've done is make the situation worse. Because once they get to the point where they have no more gold, they can't stop it. And when they can't stop it, it's going to fly.
All right, now, who is it? What's happening with the silver? You know, are they doing the same thing with the silver? Are they actually, manipulating the price of silver down? Is there manipulating the price of gold down?
Yes, they are. And I'll tell you how they're doing it. They're using the market makers, there's eight of them, in the silver pits, and four of them have shorts which are more than equal to 1 year's supply of silver mining, which is tremendous. And that's illegal. And the CFTC and the United States government turns a blind eye to the fact that the market is being rigged.
Oh, you hold that thought, we'll be right back here. Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob Chapman says, as far as he's concerned, that the silver market is being rigged, that the Securities and Exchange Commission knows that and is allowing it to happen. Why? Because the market
the Commodity Futures Corporation, which is the CFTC, one's as bad as the other.
All right, fine.
And there's another factor here, and that is the new exchange-traded funds. And if you look at the prospectus of the SLV, which is the silver fund, which is run by Barclays, and Barclays is an enemy of gold and silver. And so they form this fund, and they're not taking delivery of silver. They may have taken delivery of some, but they're using futures contracts. That's how they're doing it. And so those people who are buying the ETF and think that they own silver, they don't. They're lying to you. They don't own it. Now, if you want to go in that and trade with it and get in and out of the market, that's one thing. But if you're a long-term investor, all you're doing is cutting your own throat. And the ETFs and the exchange-traded funds and gold are doing the same thing. Now, the big one in the United States that is in New York, and it's traded as a fund, they're not buying the full amount of gold, and we can't get any kind of an audited statement. We have to take their word for it as to how much gold they have, and they're lying about it. And they say they have almost 500 tons, and they don't have that. And they've been doing the futures market, too. And so you want to keep away from them because they are destroying what you're trying to do, being long gold and silver assets. So I do not recommend any of the ETFs, nor do I recommend any of the electronically traded gold things. You know, the number one standby is the gold and silver coins and taking delivery. And for those who want more leverage, then you go in and buy gold and silver shares, and we recommend those in the publication, among other stocks and other things. And we recommend coin brokers and stock brokers who can help you. And we have no financial affiliation with them. We just do it to help people. And all we ask is that when we advise them and help them is that they subscribe.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, right now, of course, the market's going up, but it's only a matter of time before the stock market is going to top out. And, of course, certainly the one very interesting thing, we're seeing the price of gasoline and oil seem to be going up inordinately without any necessarily major cause. And, Bob, you've come out on a limb there and said that there's not going to be an attack on Iran. Are you absolutely
that
certain?
That was 10 months ago.
Yeah, right? Are you still,
and I'm the only one that said it.
Are you still holding that position?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I hope and pray that you're right.
Absolutely.
And my other...
That's why the Queen, one of the reasons the Queen was in Washington, she's the head of the Illuminati, head of the black nobility in Europe, and she was giving George's marching orders. And I'm sure she told the dolt that if you step out of line, you're not going to live very long. So you do what you're told. And that was her message to him. And also they put together this new agreement of economic and political cooperation with the European Union, being led by Germany and England. And it's a... You remember back in the 30s, the Atlantic Union, Clarence Strait, do you remember him?
Sure. Union Now was the book he wrote.
He what?
He wrote a book called Union Now.
That's right. And I don't still have a copy of it, but anyway, this is Clarence's old idea. And of course he was a one-worlder. And so you and I are very familiar with this, but you know, people listen to us and they say, God, these guys are nuts. But this is nothing new. You people out there, you just don't read. I mean, you know, what you get out of life is what you put into it. And it's very important that you find out what's going on. Well, anyway, they want to move towards, you know, how they're going to merge all of these entities together is they're going to do it by standardization, regulation of regulation, and laws. And once they've got everybody's laws about the same, and everybody's regulations and security about the same, then they'll go and they'll say it's really a fait accompli, and, you know, it's all done. Here it is. Vote on it. And, of course, in each parliament and each Congress, everybody's on the take except a handful of people, and they'll say how much, and they'll pay them all millions and millions and millions of dollars. They don't care. They just got to print more, that's all. And they will accomplish what they want in the end, and that's how they intend to do it. They come right out and said so. All you have to do is read their literature. I've been a subscriber to Foreign Affairs since 1960.
Well, I think it's important that people understand that the major thrust of all of the secret societies and covert organizations and mystery religions and it's always been the same thing. A one-world government, a one-world religion, the destruction of Christianity, and a one-world leader. And I think it's only a matter of time before this comes about, without, of course, some sort of divine intervention. And I see very little at the present time that, of course, makes me convinced that that is about to come about. Do you foresee a war in the Near East? If you don't see a war in the Middle East, what do you think is going to happen as far as the Near East is concerned? Because certainly Israel is certainly surrounded by terrorist organizations in the South, Hamas, Hezbollah in the North, Syria, just northeast of them. Certainly, there seems to be a tremendous threat to the very survival and stability of Israel. And at least in Israel today, most people are anticipating that there is going to be a war. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think they're wrong. I think they want a war because they want to expand their territory, and they also want to expand their power base. Israel has become a very aggressive nation. It has a very national socialist type of government, which is very similar to what we have in the United States. And some of the things that they've done recently with their neighbors, the Palestinians, and in Lebanon is dreadful. And, I'm extremely disappointed. They know the war is going to be over in 72 hours in Lebanon, and they drop millions of cluster bombs in to kill innocent civilians. People who do that, there's something wrong with them. I mean, normal people don't do those things. And so, that said, the sphere of influence of Israel is in the process of losing its momentum. And as I said on the show many times before, the Illuminati does not want a war with Iran and Syria. That's number one. At least not at this time. And they don't want it for some time to come, because they want to get what they want through diplomatic and commercial means. They want to get out of Iraq as soon as possible. It's very important to them, because it's just a giant loser for everybody. And if you read Brzezinski's statement 10 months ago, and that's when I said nothing's going to happen in Iran, he said, we laid this thing out in 1982. It was fantastic. And these people in the White House just messed the whole thing up. In fact, at that time, he said it set back world government 5 to 10 years. He changed the statement to 30 years, which I said was 30 years previously. I said he underestimated. He came back like, I was an echo or something. And he answered and said, no, I think it set the world government back 30 years. And so that's what the Illuminists think. So they really want out of Iraq, but they want the oil. They want that sweetheart deal that's been presented to the Iraqi government, and I don't think it's going to fly. They may leave there with virtually nothing. Now, they may have to compete with China and Russia and others for the 65 concessions that are available. And see, the thing is, in Iraq, the oil is very shallow. It's the best quality oil in the world, or among the best. It costs $5 a barrel to get out of the ground. And that's why they're so anxious to get a hold of a good part, half to three quarters, if not more, of those 65 concessions. And that's why they wrote the law, which the ruling group, not a party, but the group, which is controlled by the U.S. government, appointed by more or less, and they approved it, but their parliament has not approved it, and the noises I hear coming out, I don't know whether it is going to be approved. And I don't think that war is going to end until there's some kind of an approval so the U.S. and U.K. oil companies and probably some French companies and the Chinese and the Russians can access that oil.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, and I hope and pray that you're right. We're just going to have to, we should know really rather within just very, very few months whether anything serious is going to take place or whether this is just going to drag on and somehow we're going to get out of there. I somehow find it difficult to believe that they will ever pull all of our troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq. I think my gut feeling is they want to leave the troops there, and as long as our troops are there, why, the terror attacks will continue.
Well, I think they're going to delay Afghanistan as long as possible because our troops are guarding the drug trade for the CIA and MI6. And they're the big drug exporters. And enormous amounts of money are being made because 72% of the... In fact, the figure may even be much higher now. It could be as much as 85% of the world's heroin is coming out of Afghanistan now. And, you know, when the Taliban had it just 4 or 5 years ago, there was no production. None. They wouldn't allow it. And so there's big money involved there. And there will always be a token force as long as American oil and British oil interests are in Iraq. Excuse me.
All right, well, I think we're just going to have to wait and see about that. How should people be investing right now, Bob, from your point of view?
You know, I see gold and silver-related assets as the only way to go. The Swiss franc government paper is a backup. I think in the stocks that you buy in gold and silver, you've got to be very, very careful. We do not make many recommendations, and when we do, they're usually pretty good. Sometimes they take a while, a year or two, but they work. And you're not jumping in and out of the market and making money for stockbrokers. And I know that because I was a stockbroker for 28 years. And as far as the coins are concerned, numismatic coins are at the lowest premium that they've been in 50 years. And the premium of the numismatic coins for many of them now, over bullion coins, is only $25 to $50.
Now you speak about MS 64, 65, 66?
Well, from the 60 ones upward, but there's some 64, the half-ounce Liberties, the premium's like $35. And so some of them are more than that, but the point is that they're cheap as heck. And, you know, like those MS-64 half-ounce Liberties went to $3,000, and I think the one-ounce Liberties went to $6,000 last time around. So, you know, we're talking about a lot of money when you're buying a coin that's $300 and something for the half ounce.
All right, fine. Well, let's, before we do anything else, let's get your address out. How can people subscribe to the International Forecaster?
Well, they can all go get a free copy, either at the site or on our 800 number. But the Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, about 30 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. The 800 number to get a free copy of either kind, you would call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And if you'd like to go to our site, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. And also on that site, we put up 3 or 4 pages of the most recent issue, and it's very current. And so you can see what we're saying in part. I mean, 3 or 4 pages out of 30 isn't very much, but if we put the whole thing on, nobody would subscribe, and then we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing.
Well, it is fascinating. I always enjoy what Bob has to say. And there's a lot of things there simply besides just finance. What we're seeing is the beginning of the implosion of the housing market. Certainly, it's in some parts of the country it's really tumbling. In other parts it seems to be stabilized. In a very few parts it's going up a little bit, but Not very much, and certainly the new home construction is off dramatically. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
Yeah, I think that's a good overview. I mean, when they tell you that housing prices are only up 1%, there's a lot of areas that never went up in value, places like Indianapolis and Detroit and so on. And you know, like last month they auctioned 500 homes just in the Detroit area alone. I mean, it is, there's blocks and blocks of people who used to have houses, and the houses are still there, but the people are gone.
And this has happened in Cleveland. It's happening in other industrial centers where, of course, the industrial jobs are going. And then, of course, the exit of American manufacturing, the exit of certainly our jobs continues. People are being, of course, laid off and hired back at lower salaries. And, well, they're going to destroy the middle class.
Unfortunately.
All right, go ahead, Bob. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Oh, tell me what you want me to talk about.
Well, we could just simply talk about as far as what is actually going on, as far as the carry trade. Is the carry trade still continuing? And what's happening with
the market? Yeah, it's burgeoning. You know, when you see the yen down, now when the yen goes up in numbers, it's going down. It's the inversion of everything else. So if the yen went from 118 to 115, it would be going up in value. If it went from 118 to 120, it would be going down in value. Well, for the last 2 months, it's been going down in value. Now, it's absurd. Absolutely absurd. The Japanese have got away with financial murder for the past 25 years, and it's got to stop. We've allowed them to continue to depreciate their currency against ours. And now the Chinese are doing it, and then everybody else saw them doing it, so they all do it. So what do they do? They cheat us. We're getting screwed. We're losing our industries. We're losing our jobs. And our government's allowing it to happen.
Well, I think that our government is actually encouraging it to happen because I think they have a different worldview. And they really do intend to build up the economy of China and other countries throughout the world at the expense of America, so there will be equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations, which, of course, is the master plan laid out by Mikhail Gorbachev and Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller in the Earth Charter. They know exactly what they're doing. The average person here in America must never know that there is a plan, I believe, to impoverish the American people, and it's well underway today. You've got 1 minute to wrap up the program for us, Bob.
I wrote an article on that subject in 1967 for the American Mercury, and everybody thought I was crazy.
In fact, I saw you.
And that's how long ago, because they sat down and figured out how would they go about it, and I figured this was the way they would go about it, bring us down economically to a third world level. And how they would go about that, free trade and dropping our import barriers, and that would allow people to be able to compete because of the cost of labor more than anything else in other places. And, of course, the international and transnational conglomerates will make a fortune because they act as a middleman, people like Walmart and IBM and so on and so forth. And so there's a whole plan to this. And I figured it out a long time ago.
And I just wish people
would listen.
Coming to pass right now, God bless. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's always interesting to hear Bob Chapman. And certainly I always put a great deal of value in what he has to say. I believe we're on the edge of a financial precipice. I think people have to begin to prepare, realizing, of course, they've got to get out of debt. They've got, of course, to make sure they'll have at least some means of protecting the value of their savings, their bonds, their CDs, certainly their pension funds. All of these things are going to be systematically wiped out. People are going to have to get into a defensive position. We actually have a little pamphlet we wrote called The History of Money. tells about the history of banking going back to the times of ancient Florence and certainly to ancient Venice, to times of actually of the Knights Templar, who were the first international financiers. The history of banking, I think, is a compilation of five newsletters. It'll give you tremendous insight. And it goes right along with the talk we have on the financial tsunami. It's available in DVD and or VHS, and it comes with the syllabus by the same name. And we tell you the three rules of investing. Diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, because somebody can come by and step on the basket, but understand what is safe and what's not. Remember, I do not purport to be a financial advisor. I'm simply an amateur historian. But, you know, it has been said that though one thing we learn from history is that we never learn anything from history. Well, the people who don't learn from history are going to be destroyed in the coming crisis, monetary crisis. And my plea to you, of course, is learn the lessons of the past. Learn what has happened to the Weimar Republic. Learn and see what's going on in Zimbabwe today, where, of course, your government installed Mugabe there, and Henry Kissinger gave the word of the American people we would always be there to help. And now they have 1,800% a year inflation. The nurses don't get to work because it's too expensive for transportation, and of course, 300% increase in wages certainly did not keep up with inflation, and people are just leaving their jobs and fleeing the country. The whole country is going into chaos. Understand what's going on in Zimbabwe, and remember, this was brought about by Henry Kissinger, who is the closest advisor to our president, George Bush, at least according to Bob Woodward's latest book, Under Siege. Understand that there is a plan. There are people who have a different worldview. You need to listen to my program. It's available in DVD or VHS, The Brotherhood of Darkness. The Forbidden Secret, which is a DVD of my talk. Chris Pinto's the DVDs. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone, the DVD. They sold their souls for rock and roll. And two new DVDs, actually three that we have. One is The Atlantis Connection. It's put out, it's a talk given by Chris Pinto at our last seminar. It's available in DVD and our video. The Emergence by Constance Cumby, summarizing her 27-year effort to expose the New Age movement and who is going to be emerging. Well, you'll be fascinated. And let me recommend her DVD. We also have a four-tape set with Constance, and we carry her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. And then Chris Pinto's DVD, The Atlantis Connection. What does that have to do with anything? Well, there's some people who believe that lost Atlantis has been reconstituted right here in the United States. It will lead the world to the New World Order, into the New World Religion. So remember, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like more information on what we're talking about. That's 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection until Monday. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests. And, well, our guest this next hour is John Longdecker, and we're going to be talking about his book, Transfer of Wealth, The Case for Nationwide Concealed Carry Legislation. And, of course, I see on the back of the book that the book is recommended by Erskine. And we know Erskine. He's a good friend of ours. He used to do Erskine Overnight, another talk show host. In fact, our guest, John Longdecker, was one of the earliest paramedics in Los Angeles. Today he's the father of three. He's a columnist, he's an author, and he's a talk show pundit and cultural observer. John, thank you so very much for being with us, and you've written a fascinating book.
Thank you very much for having me, Doctor.
Why don't you just simply give us the background of the book? Because, of course, you're talking about the right of the people to keep and bear arms, and the fact that 22,000 gun laws really haven't stopped gun violence. Because, surprise, surprise, criminals don't obey the law. But of course, you're talking a lot more. It's more than about guns and the right to have guns. It's about to be free people and sovereign people under a constitution that has some meaning, and the people on the other side who have a different agenda. So you go ahead, pick up the story, and I'm just going to sit here and listen.
Why, thanks very much. You know, the thing that's most important is how we run our families, and that's our households, because in this country, the household is the stronghold of resistance to adversity, and that's why it's the number one target on the world stage. We have electronic surveillance, we have anti-family laws, we have zero-tolerance policies, all of which are attracting the attention of national and international interests. They like to eavesdrop on us because they want to learn more about us, because they want to transfer our authority out of the household so they can continue to loot the nation. Now, looting the nation is nothing new. Looting nations occurs all around the world. But the thing about this country is that when the people of this country had had enough, they decided to write a constitution that gave a bundle of rights in recognition of our Creator as the founder of the nation. And as the founder of the nation, this foundation that was built was endowed. And this endowment was inalienable rights. And so the Constitution of the United States, being the law of the land in a nation of laws, gave recognition to a bundle of rights in this country, but immense limits on government. And here is precisely why. We know from the writings of the founders what they faced and what they met in the war for independence. And the thing was abuse of due process from the Crown of England. When they wrote the Constitution, they knew they had had enough. They knew what they didn't want any more of. So when they wrote all of the laws, they knew that they had to be backed by authority and force. And so that concentration of force had to be in the hands of the sovereign citizen. So the Second Amendment, which gives the authority to the people, is not about guns, Dr. Stan. It's about abuse of due process. And the Second Amendment was not written for you and me. It was written for government.
And, of course, it was the right of the people to keep and bear arms. And, of course, the people who would take away our freedom don't want an armed population. They want a subservient population, as there is in every tyrannical society. And you can pass all the gun laws you want to. It's not going to keep the criminals from having the weapons. It'll keep the law-abiding citizens from having weapons, and make them simply subservient to their rulers. This is really what it's about.
That's what they're used to.
Well, John, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
Well, fundamentally, if we have a situation that's like that's like an unhappy marriage, for instance. Many people broker rights for individuals in this country, which are not spelled out in the Constitution. All we have in the Constitution is a small bundle of rights, and that's enough in a country of free people. That's all we need. We don't need to discover new rights. We don't need to be unaccountable for silliness, and we don't need to transfer that authority to other people, because our responsibility that comes with our freedom is the price that we pay so that we can hand down our rights and sovereignty to individuals, or we might as well hand them over. But in this country, there are numerous opportunists, such as in the case of no-fault divorce, which blames the institution itself for oppression and alleges violence. And as one example of looting the nation, which involves interference with our sovereignty under the name or very thinly veiled excuse of violence. And no-fault divorce is one of those. Zero tolerance in the schools is another example of an institution that's based on a theory of violence, such as school bullying, which is designed in the final analysis to silence parents. Now you can't go and say, well, my child was bullied and he was only fighting back. The principal holds his hand up and says, I'm sorry, Mrs. Longnecker, but the child was fighting. My hands are tied. Well, his hands are not really tied. This was a trap, because the conditions, like many conditions in the United States, are allowed to deteriorate so that when the individual parents, in this case, make a demand for change, it falls into the trap. Now, the important thing about concealed carry is this. When we have our independence in this country, we don't need a lot of stupid go-nowhere policies. Not because we shoot to kill somebody and resolve the problem without due process, but because crime can be de-escalated by citizen authority, due process, and the use of superior force. Crime is greatly reduced in states that offer concealed carry. They don't grant concealed carry, they affirm it, because it's a constitutional right. And more than half the states, nearly all the states now, offer some form of concealed carry. But the nation is in need of a uniform law that either says, we'll have a uniform concealed carry, or we should repeal all gun laws. Now, the reason is that if we can impeach all of the go-nowhere policies in this country, which are based on a theory of violence, it'll be only because independence shines through.
Hold that thought there.
Right ahead.
Well, I guess it's John Longnecker, and go right ahead, John.
If independence shines through, it will humiliate and impeach all of the go-nowhere policies. There won't be any need for the war on poverty and the war on crime, because independence would shine through. But a lot of officials who are used to having their way, and not all officials, but only some, are used to imposing their idea of order in this country, and they hide the ball. So they write gun laws. When they write gun laws, they do it against the Constitution of the United States, because it imposes a rule that interferes with citizen authority. Our citizen authority is, of course, hidden. It's obfuscated, and that obfuscation is backed by force. One example is Virginia Tech. Now, on their campus, they have a gun ban. And the gun ban says, you cannot exercise lethal force in facing grave danger on our campus. So, if you want to attend school here, you're going to have to understand this is a victim disarmament zone, no gun zone. But the problem is that this proves to be as advertised for anybody who wants to express their anger and rage and come in and murder innocent people, and I add defenseless people. Now, this doesn't happen all over the United States, especially in places that are known to have armed constituents. So the officials need to understand that the thing that's being obfuscated in this country is not only the Second Amendment to the Constitution, but the citizen authority, which is backed by lawful force. And that is what is un-American in this country.
And I think, of course, if you stop and think of it, why do we have so many school shootings? Why? Because of the federal legislation that has made schools gun-free zones. This is federal legislation. You can't have a gun within 1,000 feet of a school, which means that every school in the United States today is a potential shooting gallery, because the criminals know that if they go in there, they can shoot and shoot and shoot and kill as much as they want to, because nobody's going to be able, at least initially, to come in and do anything. And usually the police hang back because, well, for whatever reason. And 32 people died at Virginia Tech. Why? Because of the federal legislation. Certainly, you had a crazy guy there. But had there been one student in the first room that had a weapon, why, he could have saved 31 other lives. But there were no students that had a gun, and none of the teachers had guns. And, of course, the police took an awful long time getting there. And the students died because there was nobody there to defend them, and nobody could defend them, because if they had a gun, they'd be violating the law. And instead of talking about, oh, my goodness, you know, how can we pass more laws, let's start repealing the laws so people can defend themselves. This is what you do in a free society, and in a controlled society, you have no right to defend yourself.
Oh, that's right. You know, they don't believe that the right is a creator-given right. They think that it's subject to interpretation. But when they take their oath of office, it says that they will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. When a police officer takes the same oath, they have no wiggle room or latitude in whether they will deliver that eviction notice. They have to deliver the eviction notice irrespective of what they think. That's their job. Well, when it comes to officials in this country who make policy, it's also their job. They may not exercise any latitude that says, well, you know, we have some kind of room for regulation here. Because where does it say regulation? The Second Amendment does not apply to individuals, and therefore the concept of whether it's, for instance, an individual or collective right is totally without meaning, because the Second Amendment is not written for you and me. It's written for the individuals who take the oath of office, because they are the people who might use abuses of due process for such things such as regulation. So shall not be infringed as it applies to government means not even a little. Now, there's other places in the Constitution that are just as absolute. You don't really believe that Rudy Giuliani and his reasonableness for sensible gun laws could apply that to the ownership of another human being in this day and age, do you? There isn't any wiggle room or any latitude whatsoever for the ownership of another human being in this country, not even a little. There's no room for sensible regulation or any latitude at all to own another person in this country. The Second Amendment and the law against involuntary servitude are two perfect examples of absolute law. There's just no room, wiggle room. So that when we're talking about the Virginia Tech shooting, we're talking about obfuscating citizen authority. And that authority means that you can meet grave danger if in your reasonable apprehension, you believe you're facing grave danger, you may use up to lethal force without getting permission from another authority. You are the authority. And because the Americans can come to the aid of another in standing in the shoes of the victim, it's just another example of how the civilians in this country are the supreme authority. And that authority trumps the authority of the campus officials, at least in this particular question. So when it's obfuscated, you have to be suspicious. What are they really going for? As a nonprofit, how are they continuing to operate in the public interest to be tax exempt if they're running counter to established public policy and interest and not advocating the civil rights secured by law? And the IRS code has something to say on that subject. So there are many reasons why individuals in this country must be encouraged to resist this obfuscation, to educate themselves, it doesn't take much, and to make the decision on their own if they wish to carry their weapons anywhere they have a right to be, because they have citizen authority to do so.
Well, I was interested in your discussion. You commented that about 40 states have some form of concealed weapon laws.
Well, it's even more than that now.
Really?
Yes. The majority of the states have some form of concealed carry. Maybe it's a little spotty, and the anti-gun movements are turning up the heat a bit, sure. But the states have taken the position, and stronger in favor of citizen authority when they have to examine Hurricane Katrina. And some states have written law, passed legislation that says you cannot confiscate weapons in time of an emergency anymore. It's illegal now in some states. It's sad that they have to pass a law like that, but you know, it would be much easier if the Congress said, repeal all gun laws. Because the gun laws assist the looting of the country when they punish the innocent person from letting their independence take control of the situation. Here's what happens when you're told no guns on campus, no guns in the workplace. The official sends out two messages. They speak for police when they say, don't do anything until we get there. And a second message goes to the murderer. It says, you have 4 minutes. Now, that's not in the public interest, and it's not in public policy. A nonprofit that advocates that policy proactively and punishes the citizen is violating its mission. Now, here's another comparison. When we talk about citizen CPR, we're talking about public policy and interest. We're talking about the authority to come to the aid of another person. We're talking about first aid because time is everything. When I was a paramedic in the early 70s, I was tapped on the shoulder by the American Heart Association, myself and many, many other chiefs across the country for a program that would take advantage of prearranged discussions where I would join a panel and try to get doctors and attorneys in the audience to get behind the movement to train civilians in citizen CPR. Now, at that time, the Heart Association called it citizen CPR. Today, it's called bystander CPR. The idea being this. The physicians opposed the idea when they asked the question, why don't we just leave it to the professionals, such as yourself? And I said, well, your crash cart in your environment and in your paradigm is 10 paces down the hall, so that when you have a cardiac arrest situation in-house, you push a blue button or a red button, and you call Code Blue, and your crash cart and your Code Blue team is literally 10 seconds away. Right? He said, right, yeah. I said, but in the field, the rescue is not 10 seconds away. You know that brain death begins in 4 minutes. And in time of cardiac arrest, we cannot always be there with a life-saving response time of under 3 minutes. The light bulbs went on. They weren't wrong to investigate this question and object. They were thinking in their own clinical situation. When we raised the issue that we cannot be there with a life-saving response time of under 3 minutes in the case of cardiac arrest, all of a sudden they saw it our way, and the movement was much, much simpler. All right. The Heart Association says that if you don't deliver CPR in a certain time, there is a period after that called the resuscitation failure zone, where CPR becomes less and less effective because of brain death. Okay. So the training of citizens in how to deliver artificial circulation and artificial respiration is life-saving. The important thing is, so is carrying concealed weapons, because you already have the same authority. And we have the same objections. Why don't you leave it to the police? The same question of why don't we leave it to the paramedics? You need to go?
No, you go right ahead.
The idea is that most citizens who are the heads of households don't fully understand the debate. The reason that we cannot leave it to the police is because the police have their own failure zone. And that is, we call it the criminal violence failure zone. The question is, can they get there with a life-saving response time? The answer is no, they cannot, because it all happens too fast, and the consequences are grave, just as grave as an average cardiac arrest. The comparison is, you're facing grave danger, and you're facing it alone. The other comparison is, the police or the responders are not going to arrive in time. You have your own sovereign authority to act.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back here in just a moment. All right. Well, John's point is using the analogy of the CPR. You know, you've got to have people trained to get cardiopulmonary resuscitation because, of course, the emergency people may not be there in time. And if you don't know how to do it, of course, you're going to lose the person you're trying to resuscitate. And, of course, the same thing would hold true as far as the situation of the police officer is concerned. If you certainly, if the criminal comes in, he's going to shoot you, and you call for the police, but the police may not be there for 3, 4, 5 minutes, and by then it's too late. You've got to be prepared to defend yourself. This is you've got to be prepared to do CPR to defend somebody else. So is that pretty well the analogy you're trying to make, John?
Yes. They're virtually identical. Now, here's another thing that every head of household should know. By the way, the very last comparison was that non-intervention is the same between citizens, between CPR and facing grave danger, is that without intervention, without your authority, when you're alone, without the intervention, the results are still the same. Painful and irrevocable. Now, with all of those comparisons, then you get a new perspective. It changes the complexion. But here's one of the most important truths that most heads of household don't know when they plan their own household safety. You know that the head of a household wants to plan the very best for their family, their loved ones. They plan for a root canal. They plan for a traffic accident, illness, unemployment, home remodeling, all kinds of things they provide for. But the idea of how to meet and manage or even survive an encounter with violent crime is the most neglected area of household management. The most neglected. But one of the things that everybody should know is the same thing that gun owners know, police, attorneys, and judges know, including the Supreme Court in 2005. That is this. Police have no duty to protect you. Now, Longnecker, what are you talking about? Aren't they sworn to protect and to serve? Yes, they're protecting and serving the public. But time after time, since the inception of an organized police force in the middle 1800s, up until the Supreme Court in Castle Rock versus Gonzales in 2005, with very rare exception, extremely rare exception, courts have found no constitutional right to police protection, even in the presence of a restraining order. You can't sue the police and prevail or failure to protect because it's not their job. And that's a revelation that most heads of household just don't know. So in planning your household safety and how you will manage violent crime, you've got to take into account the police don't even have to come, even if you can complete the request for aid. Now, it changes the entire complexion of how you're going to view ownership of a gun in modern times.
And I certainly agree, and I think it's so vitally important that people only have to look at the murder capital of the world. It's our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where there occurs more crimes per capita than any other place I know of. Why? Because you're not allowed to have any sort of protection. The people have been clamoring for the right to defend themselves, and it's really so interesting that recently, why the courts have found that the people have the right in Washington, D.C., to have a gun to protect themselves, and the liberals are screaming.
Mm-hmm.
Why? They say, look at all the people who are going to be killed. They got the highest murder rate in the world, or at least in the country. There.
Well, I'll tell you something else.
Hold right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're just talking about Washington, D.C., with one of the highest murder rates in the country because they have such strong gun laws that nobody can defend themselves. And, of course, when guns are outlawed, only the outlaws and criminals and the violent criminals and murderers will have guns. And that's the story of our nation's capital. And yet, of course, anybody suggests that maybe the people should have a right to defend themselves. The liberals are there screaming, oh, my goodness, people are going to die. Well, they're already dying in larger numbers than they would in the adjacent communities where they have strict gun laws. So pick up the story, John.
Well, not only is that true, but in the states that that affirm your right to carry, many states have open carry where you can wear your weapon any place you go, and concealed carry. But in those states, all of the dire predictions of blood in the streets, lover shootings, road rage, hothead shootings, all the rest of them, they just never appeared. After decades of predictions, not just screams over Washington, D.C., but gun ban enthusiasts battling the liberty enthusiasts said, oh, you can't defend yourself. You're going to be trigger. Never happened. Year in, year out. Never happened. Because the people who are of the mind to own a weapon, take the training for the purposes of protecting themselves and their loved ones, are not of the mindset to break the law. They're not breaking the law now, and their lives are at stake. What process do they choose to protect themselves? Due process. And they go by the book, and they try to change the law. But when the law is changed, such as by the Supreme Court in the 9th District back there, and they said, you can't have a gun ban in Washington, D.C., who opposes it now? Who's breaking the law now? The mayor of Washington, D.C., and the mayor of New Orleans. Because courts have said, can't do that. Put the guns back. What does Mayor Fenty say? He says, well, we're going to keep the gun ban in place. But you've been told. It's now against the law. You've had a stay of execution for a reasonable period, but you can't intend to disobey the law and then say that we are a nation of laws. The Second Amendment Foundation in New Orleans joined the National Rifle Association, and they sued the city of New Orleans, and the court found can't confiscate guns. It's against the Constitution. You can't do it. You have to give them back. But Mayor Nagin says, no, we didn't have them. Turns out they did have them. Now they're in contempt of court for still refusing. Nearly 2 years after that confiscation, they still have not returned the weapons as of today. Now, this is the part that Americans need to wake up and look at. It's frightening because all of the fears that we had are now coming true. This is frightening. The idea that what we thought was paranoia is now fully confirmed when the officials themselves disobey the law while they compel us to obey the law as a, quote, nation of laws. All of the Kennedys who carry their machine guns, the Dianne Feinsteins with their bodyguards, all of the individuals who want us to turn in our weapons, who themselves carry weapons or hire people who do, want the protection for themselves because they think there's nuts out there. But they don't want us to have the protection for one important reason, and that is it will prove conclusively that the Founding Fathers were right and that independence is superior to anything conceived in the mind of activists or ambitious officials. And thank goodness they are in the minority. Not all government wants to take the guns. Not all government wants to obfuscate the law and your personal independence. Only some. And this is the hope for the future. We can battle these people through due process and follow through if we can get Congress to repeal all gun laws. Imagine the revenues we set free by impeaching the fraud of all of these stupid go-nowhere anti-crime policies.
Well, you mentioned your book, of course, that Ted Kennedy actually has a bodyguard that carries a machine gun. Is that really
true?
Two of them?
According to most reports, he doesn't mind our knowing this. Automatic weapons.
Now, how can they do that? Those are against the law.
No, they aren't. They're not against the law for police. And automatic weapons can, you know, you can operate automatic weapons on special campuses in Nevada and other states.
But of course, it's...
You can't own one.
But he can't hire police. He's got to be a private bodyguard.
Absolutely.
And so basically what he has done, he actually has bodyguards with automatic weapons to defend him, but he, of course, objects to you and I carrying a small weapon to defend ourselves and our families.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he gives hypocrisy a bad name, but then what would you expect from the hero of Chappaquiddick? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is John Longnecker. John, you go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, fundamentally, the transfer of wealth, the case for nationwide concealed carry, was written purely for the non-gun owners. You know, if we went and to a gun owners meeting, a lot of people would learn a great deal about what the Bill of Rights was intended to be and how it's relevant to our kitchens and our bedrooms today. And that is, some things never change. The thing that never changes is the abuse of due process. Some people get the feeling that they have wiggle room, that they have more brains, that they have more authority, and that sort of thing. But in this country, one of our greatest fears is abuses of powers not granted. And when those powers not granted take on force, and then they want a monopoly on the force, then we'd best be very, very suspicious. Now, these people don't have to be sinister. They don't have to be much of anything. The fact is, they're wrong no matter how you cut it, because we did not give them that authority. And when we do give authority to police officers and to judges and to Congress critters, we never gave up any of our own authority. But they can bluff the average citizen out of understanding their resolve and their authority, and they can back that with force. And that's where we're headed. Part of the problem that we have to face in the years ahead is electronic surveillance, based again on a theory of violence. For instance, the national ID card is based on terrorism. Now, can we stop terrorism in this country with the armed citizen? Yes, because most terrorist crime is not all bombs. It's oftentimes intrusion and abduction. It is oftentimes poisoning water. It is oftentimes takeovers, as we've seen most recently, much of which is a completed act. Now, if we look at an abduction or a robbery, a rape, or a mayhem as a completed act, then we understand that it can be interrupted and de-escalated by an alert citizen. Now, the plan is be alert, have a plan, and refuse to be a victim. And chances are you're going to be very, very successful. Now, let's take a look at a few figures furnished by the FBI for the numbers nuts. Numbers nuts like facts, and here's a couple of facts that every household should know. The FBI's Uniform Crime Report says that for the most recent year, about 29,500 people were shot to death by guns, rifles, handguns, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, will you hold that thought? We're going to be back here in just a moment, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, as you know, is John Longnecker. His book is Transfer of Wealth, The Case for Nationwide Concealed Carry. John, I want you to tell our listeners, if you have a website, I'd like you to tell them if you have where they can get your book.
My thanks. The website for the book is transferofwealth.net. The name of the book and the extension is .net, transferofwealth.net. It's available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. My regular column, Good for the Country, is syndicated, and it's based at goodforthecountry.com, so that every edition of that column, syndicated, is based at that particular website, and makes its way around the World Wide Web by people who pick it up and clip it, and by regular outlets that take up the column. The thing about the FBI's Uniform Crime Report is that it keeps a tally of murders by handguns, by guns, and by all types of murders, by reports handed in by police departments around the country. And if we look at guns alone, it turns out to be roughly about 29,500. But that's only the first half of the statistic the FBI has compiled in its Uniform Crime Report. How many times a year do you believe Americans use a gun to stop a crime in progress? Give me a guess.
Oh, I'd say probably 100,000, 150,000, but you have the figures. I don't.
Well, I always like to make it part of the dialogue. The FBI says that 2.5 million times a year.
Oh my goodness! Well, I will withdraw my statement then. Go ahead.
No. It's great because it just emphasizes the point. For all of the shootings, for all of the gun deaths you've got to wonder about the sanity of the anti-gun movement. You just have to think, are these people really emotionally involved and overwrought, or are they acting in the public interest as they claim?
Well, I mean, how many of those gun shootings are actually carried out by police officers who are shooting people with
guns?
Well,
as you know, you can find that part of the aggregate by visiting the Uniform Crime Report at FBI.gov, and it breaks it down for you in a different appendix. And you can ask, you can look up a lot of different questions, but I'll tell you that the bulk of the shootings are crime-on-crime shootings. Why? Because out of that 1.5 million where people de-escalate the situation using their authority and the superior force, many, many, many times, obviously, many times, they don't fire the weapon. There's no need. Either the person bolts, or they're held for police, or something that winds up being a happy ending instead of a tragedy.
And certainly so many of our shootings today are gang-related, one gang shooting another gang.
That's right.
And then, of course, yeah, there may occasionally be a domestic crime, you know, certainly an incensed husband shooting an unfaithful wife or shooting, a man who's stolen his wife or taken advantage of his wife or raped his wife or something of the sort. And those things are tragic. But you can pass all the gun laws in the world you want to. And, of course, these are diseases of passion, and you're not going to change things unless you change the heart of men.
That's right. But, you know, the danger to the nation of gun control is that it aids others to loot the country. And when we loot the country, we're talking about industrial complexes that love to see crime grow and take an active role in offering products and services in cottage industries and high technology that depends so much on the continuation of violence, the loss of life, and the tragedy that comes from even the non-homicidal crime, that they justify their predatory presence. And they have a very, very big interest in supporting gun control. Gun control doesn't work, though. It just doesn't work. And as always, if you let independence shine through, the country will be so much better, because it will impeach, humiliate, totally discredit many of these policies. Take, for instance, the RFID chips. Now, you know, sooner or later, law enforcement is going to be attracted to it, and they're going to want a development of more technology in RFID for law enforcement. The RFID chip is a threat to the United States, because the individuals can be compelled to wear them, and the information that's on the chip that is yielded by an RFID reader can allow the individual and their habits, their tastes, their purchases, their bank accounts, everything to be tracked worldwide. Now, this is important, because whatever's on that RFID chip is going to be depending on the kind of application. For instance, is it going to be on the back of a credit card? It's probably going to have a lot of personal data that's critical to your privacy and the protection of your assets on that chip. What about an RFID chip for medical purposes? What about any information on those chips that can be deleted by accident or mistake, retaliation, or something could be added to your file? Now, if you love mistakes in your credit history, with very little accountability, you'll love RFID chips. And how they're tracked is impressive. Lots of folks are going to be taking new internet modems, and in those internet modems will be an RFID chip reader. The more products you buy, the more people who get involved in the industry, the more chips you will have all over you every time you get home and walk in the door. Every time you activate the chip and update it, it will be read with new information when you walk in, and your modem reads the download information. Every time that a new subscriber joins the database, such as insurance companies, employers, government agencies, any agency whatsoever that can justify taking a peek at your secret files will have access to your database. And because these shared, and because readers, the RFID readers from the gas station to the supermarket now share this data. You are then tracked worldwide. Worldwide. That's not too very far away. And finally, for the individual who says, oh, John, I don't have anything to worry about. I have nothing to hide. I don't even have a credit card. Doesn't matter. Because with all sorts of redundancies of databases, there is always all kinds of room and no accountability for mistake, abuse, and retaliation. And you know darn good and well that if somebody is anonymous and they don't like your attitude when you file a complaint, they can add something to your folder, or they can lose your folder. And if you don't have all the information, a bell will go off when you go through the reader, and you will be taken aside and questioned. This idea of monitoring people and identifying people to show their papers is all based on terrorism and violence. But if we all carry concealed weapons, and if not everybody, but if we all exercise our authority, and if we don't tolerate being a victim, and if we exercise our independence, then we have no need for these agencies, and that means no need for national ID cards, no need for RFID chips on human beings for law enforcement. No need.
And certainly, of course, one of the ways they're going to get the RFID is they're going to say, well, but what about the child molester? I mean, don't we need to track the child molesters? And so, in the name of protecting the children, they want to at least put the RFID bands on the child molesters. And then what about the mentally defective children or elderly people who are confused with Alzheimer's disease or getting lost and wandering off? And so they're going to want to justify, you know, some sort of a federal law to track them because it's for their own good.
Oh, yeah.
And you can just see how this whole thing will develop. Well, of course, you know, the law-abiding citizen has nothing to fear. I mean, why should they object to our efforts to have everybody have a card so that we will know who the terrorists are or who the illegal immigrants are? But all of this has nothing to do with tracking terrorists. It has nothing to do with tracking child offenders. It has to do with them controlling the populace. This is really what it's all about, isn't it, John?
Of course it is, because that's the way they think. They're used to having things done when they snap their fingers. They're used to a lot of things. In Washington, they call that Potomac fever. But it's outside of a lot more places than Washington. You know, this is a real test of our American sovereignty. In America, sovereignty means that the citizen is the supreme authority. We are the supreme authority in a lot of questions. But the thing is that when it comes time to object, a lot of people don't show up. There are a lot of no-shows. When it goes to Washington, when it goes to committee, should we put RFID in the food? Should we put it in the water? Should we put it under the skin? A lot of people don't object. And the Congress, who is dealing with America in good faith, sees us as no-shows. And so they believe that there's an approval, when in fact there is not. The RFID chip industry believes that it can stomp all over people and that resistance is futile. And they said so in numerous press releases and interviews. That's frightening. When they believe that they will be utterly successful and worldwide because the objection is futile. Well, it's not futile. As long as our sovereignty remains intact, and so this is a test of that sovereignty. The question is no going to be enough? We don't need to furnish exhibits. We don't need to furnish data to Congress. We need to appear before Congress, but we don't need to prove anything. All we need to do is say no. Because in this country, when we say no, our sovereignty by law means no. And that should be enough. Unless our sovereignty is dead and we don't know it yet. And so the RFID chip, the national ID card, even concealed carry, is a test of that sovereignty. And we need to find out precisely where we stand.
Well, you know, I really think, John, we really have seen this in the last few weeks, where, you know, we have this issue of the Trans-NAFTA highway. And, you know, because of the efforts of a few people like Howard Phillips and Phyllis Schlafly and Dr. Corsi and Tom DeWeese and a handful of others who have let the American people understand the implication of that highway out of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And suddenly, you know, because the legislature in Texas, both the House and the Senate, overwhelmingly, we're talking about 90-95%, voted not to allow the superhighway to be built, to put a two-year moratorium on it, and they said no way. And the federal government is furious, and they're saying we're gonna withhold all funds from you. We're gonna take away your highway funds. We're gonna punish you for not going along.
Okay, let him come.
And because this is really, I think, so important for people to understand that the people in Washington D.C. don't care what we think, but the massive numbers of people here in the United States still value their sovereignty, still value their freedom, still value the idea that we are sovereign citizens and we're not going to have them telling us what to do. I think this is one of the most optimistic things I've seen in a long time in the confrontation between the state of Texas and the fascist element in Washington, D.C. The line is drawn. Let's see who blinks.
Well, they certainly meet that test of fascism, don't they? When they defy... well, there are several arguments. States' rights, individual sovereignty, you know, is it good for the environment? What about the border? There's all sorts of legitimate arguments that can qualify for that moratorium. But when they say, no, we're not going to stop it, we're going to go ahead on schedule, we've got a problem. We've got a problem with our sovereignty first, because our no doesn't mean no anymore. And that's why they want to take the guns. Not everybody, but some. And when you take those guns, you're going to allow crime to prevail. And crime does the dirty work of a lot of the social policies they want to usher in, because it means money for the individuals who grow the crime and sell the electronic technology. It means a lot of money for the officials who get the war chest. And it means a great deal of prestige for them and a great deal of legacy. And these are the coin of the realm that are very important to those officials. But the meaningful coin of the realm to us is not revenues. It's not money at all. It's our liberty. That's the only coin of the realm that they will accept. Because our liberty, our authority, stands in the way of looting the country. So it has to be pushed aside. The family has to be pushed aside and redefined and watered down. The right to self-defense has to be pushed aside. The right to assert from your Board of Education that your child be given the benefit of the doubt in a bullying situation and not be suspended. Workplace, campus shootings, stupid policies, all kinds of things are all related to a defective foundation of violence. So that when independence shines, and I'm talking about your good judgment, your cool head, your training, and your authority should prevail, it's being stomped, discouraged, and punished. So you don't get wise. Because if you do get wise, everybody else will agree, and they'll wind up repealing all of these stupid policies. That's going to make them mad. So the only choice they have at this point is to just move forward, whether we like it or not. But it's going to divide the nation, and it's going to dissolve the thing and make us all an asset of the globe. And that's not good for the country.
Well, I think it was really fascinating what's happened this last week there in Kansas, where, of course, the whole town was wiped out by the tornado, and, of course, they called for the National Guard, and it couldn't get there because,
yeah.
First of all, when it got there, there weren't very many of them because they were all off fighting. They were all fighting in Iraq at George Bush's war there, and of course they didn't have any equipment, they didn't have any trucks, they didn't have the facilities to help the people, because they were all off fighting for democracy over in Iraq. And I think this was a beautiful example. I mean, I hate to think of the suffering and the unnecessary loss of life there, but I think people are beginning to look at this and say something's seriously wrong when our boys are going over to seas to fight for freedom. And we have no protection here in America.
You know what else? I don't like the people who take their place. It worries me. In the confiscations in New Orleans, some of the reports were that they... And you can see the uniforms of the California Highway Patrol. who was there under a mutual aid or some other policy. And there were some Army people, and there were some New Orleans police. You know, I'd like to think that a lot of those 200 absentees of Blue Flu were individual officers who knew they were scheduled to confiscate weapons and who just decided they don't want any part of it. I'd like to think that. I really would.
Well, I think that some of them, of course, were the professional mercenaries, the professional killers from Blackwater. What were they doing bringing in professional mercenaries into New Orleans when, of course, the National Guard should have been there? And, of course, what about these private mercenary armies? Who's paying them? I mean, who is their loyalty to America, to the Constitution? John, it's been a fascinating program. Our guest has been John Longnecker. His book, Transfer of Wealth, and the wealth he's talking about is our most precious possession, our freedom under the Constitution. We'll be right back. Hang on, John. Well, John, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, fundamentally, a transfer of wealth and the case for nationwide concealed carry in its second edition is written purely for the non-gun owner heads of household, because a lot of the discussion of what liberty is really about never really escapes the gravitational pull of some of the real authorities, because of it lacks a connectivity. I think I've made a good connection between the original intent of the Founding Fathers and abuse of due process, and the abuse of due process that we see today in how we run our homes, and how our citizen authority, the right that we have to make the choices, not just the right to make the choices, but the kind of options that we have, are being taken off the table because they can really embarrass all of these policies that want to tell you how to run your home. And I mean a very, very big majority of them can be unwound simply by unwinding one problem, and that is gun laws.
And I agree with you, and I think that we should have the right to keep and carry weapons, and because it's carried under the Constitution. And if you believe in the Constitution, then, of course, any person should have the right to have a weapon, as long as they're not a felon or mentally defective, and that should be the decision of the local community, certainly not of the federal government. And certainly the Second Amendment says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. John makes the point very well. Shall not be abridged doesn't mean, well, sometimes it can be abridged, or maybe we could abridge it if we found that there were, you know, that we think this would be a safer world if we just restricted it somewhat. I mean, shall not means shall not, but you agree.
I do. It wasn't written for us. It was written for government entirely.
It was written for the politicians so they would have no wiggle room. It is our right as free citizens in a free society. We have to stand up for those rights. John Longnecker, thank you so very much. You've done a great job with this book, and I will think it's a very important book. Once again, where can people get it?
They can get it online at any of the online booksellers. They can order it at the brick and mortar, and they can get further details at transferofwealth.net.
Transferofwealth.net. And remember, transfer of wealth really is talking about your wealth is your sovereignty, and your sovereignty gives you the right to keep and bear weapons. John, God bless. Thanks very much for being with
us. Thank you so much.
Please keep in touch.
Thank you, sir. You too.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope many of you have enjoyed the program this evening. John does an excellent job. And in the communities where they have more guns, they have less crime. In the communities where they have less guns, they have more crime. It's just that simple, and people ought to be able to understand what this is really all about. It is about disarming the people in preparation for the coming dictatorship. And our plea to you is, of course, get the information and help us to get it out across America. Understand that there really are people who look at the world from an entirely different point of view, because, of course, they have a different objective. They believe in a ruling elite, and that's why you need to get my talks on, first of all, the Brotherhood of Darkness, then you get to read my talk on Forbidden Secret, the Forbidden Secret. Now, there's another secret that's come out, put up by Rhonda Byrne, popularized by Oprah Winfrey and Larry King, and by Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul and Jim Carrey. And millions of people have actually heard about the secret. And they've heard how they can manipulate the world and how they can get money and popularity and wealth. And many of them are trying. And you know what they're finding? Sometimes it works. But nobody ever explains to them why it works. Well, you'll certainly want to get our four tapes out on the secret behind the secret. That's the secret behind the secret. Let me suggest that you make it a point to get this new four tape set. It's very important. And then, of course, a new DVD or video, The Emergence, with Constance Cumby. A very important DVD and talk of Constance's, given this last seminar here in California, Radio Liberty seminar. The talk given by Chris Pinto, The Atlantis Connection. It's available both on DVD and in video once again. And these are important because they take you to an understanding of what's going on. There are many, many people who believe that America was to become the lost Atlantis, who would leave the world to this new world order. And that's what President Bush talked about in his second inaugural address, when he talked about how when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What's the ancient hope? The new order of the ages. What's the new order of the ages? Novo Ordo Seclorum, the slogan on the back of the dollar bill, behind the occult emblem that lies beneath, the symbol of the ancient mystery religions, the triangle that contains the glorified eye that was put on part of the original plan for the emblem on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. You need to understand the secret plan for America that was laid out by the occultists when our nation was founded. Not the Christians who founded it, but the occultists, because there have always been two forces here. You want to see the secret mysteries of America's beginning. It's a DVD. And then you want to see the latest Riddles in Stone. I mean, it is one of the most amazing DVDs because it's shot in Washington, D.C. with pictures that you will never see elsewhere about the insides of many of our major buildings and the occult influence that is there, laying out America's destiny to lead the world to the New World Order and the New World Religion. And that is why we're in the Middle East today. And that is why we're not coming home. We're not coming home from the Middle East. And the war will continue. The war will last forever. And if you doubt that, of course, you need to see the DVD, The Day That Changed the World Forever. And you'll hear the Premier of Canada saying, this war will never end. This war will never end. You need to understand the spiritual implications. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, tell others they can listen to our internet programs 5 hours a day, 9 hours a day on Global Star 4. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks.